isn't that special?
Ladies and gentlemen, it is time for episode 30 of Chat with a Cat. This is being recorded following sim number 8, the All-Star weekend and the trade deadline of the 1985-86 season. Last time we did the kind of overview, I guess, of the Atlantic Division. This time we're going to dive in and do the Central Division. There was some question as to whether I'd just go in order, kind of working my way top to bottom through the standings. I think that probably is what I'm going to do. It's kind of the easiest way to do things. So without further ado, let's dive into things. And we'll start by taking a look at the Bucks. I kind of mentioned this in my pod last time. I do think this is the Bucks' year, barring a substantial injury. I think they are your favorites in terms of if you're handicapping who's going to win things. The interesting thing to me with the Bucks, well, I guess they better be the favorite. They are paying a fairly substantial tax bill, and they are not likely to get off that next season. They're still committed to quite a bit of salary. At least not without changing the constitution of their team. The Bucks are fairly easy to understand as far as team building goes. It's a team that really has gone all in on the concept of interior defense and to a lesser degree perimeter defense. But if you take a look at their starters, Jovery Carroll has an 85 rating in blocks. Kevin McHale has a 95 rating. Terry Tyler at small forward has a 100. And even their backups, Kurt Nymphius has a 92. Benoit Benjamin has an 84. Even Bill Willoughby has a 66. So all of their front court players are going to block shots, and they've all got pretty good post-defense ratings. On the perimeter, they're running Lewis Lloyd with a 71 steal and a 65 perimeter defense. Danny Young with an 89 steal and a 75 perimeter defense. Doc Rivers with a 100 steal and a 71 perimeter defense. So it's pretty clear the Bucks are built for defense. Inside, they're going to choke you up. Outside, they're going to pressure you. And that that tracks with their defensive rating. They're the top defensive team in the league, both by team defensive rating and by points allowed. They're one of the best defenses in terms of points per shot. They're the best defense in terms of adjusted field goal percentage. They're the best team in terms of regular field goal percentage. They're leading the league in blocks. They're close to the top in steals. They're leading the league in rebounds. And even their offensive numbers are very efficient, mostly on the back of Kevin McHale, who is having an MVP season. And, of course, Jovery Carroll has always been very efficient. And so that's how the Bucks do it, is they choke you off defensively, and offensively they then turn around and punish you. For those reasons, I think their game plan travels well. And I think the one thing that makes me curious about the Bucks is that they made an effort to collect all of their own draft picks for the next 3 years, at least all their first round picks. And anytime I see Doug do that, my antenna goes up. We know that after season one, the Bucks completely tore down and rebuilt into their current iteration. He's facing down a fairly substantial tax bill this season. He would be a repeater next season. Wouldn't shock me at all to see him hit the reset button. His propensity to do resets is fairly well documented at this point, but I do think he'll be doing a reset following a championship. I think the Bucks are set up pretty well, even if they are expensive for the future. None of their key players is over the age of 30. So they're still in that time where they can expect their core not to deteriorate. And I think there's a big enough gap between them and the rest of the league that they're still comfortable. So if he wants to run it back another season, I think he's got the opportunity to contend. The challenge, as always, with the Bucks is trying to predict when will Doug get bored and hit the reset button. Having all of his picks, he has the chance to do that. I don't know if he's going to do it or not, but you know, again, this team should be the favorite this season. If they don't blow it up, they should probably be the favorite next season. I think two things can derail the Bucks train. They might lose a playoff series to another championship contender, maybe in the conference finals or the finals. But in terms of the Bucks' reign of terror, it's going to stop when one of two things happens. Number one, either Doug gets bored and blows things up, or number two, the tax man cometh and bloweth the team up. They've got no key pieces coming up for contract raises next season, but in 1987, again, assuming they tried to keep the team together, they'd have to give Doc Rivers a raise, and they're already well above the cap for this season. If I was guessing, I would guess the cap is about where they would be going into 87, but then they've got to give Rivers a max raise and put the rest of the team around them. So they're probably looking at being up, you know, in the 30 to 40% over the cap at that point. So I think the writing is on the wall for Doug. Not that this is poor team construction. I think Doug is the kind of person, in some ways, he's like Chad with this. In that he is happy to pay for talent. He doesn't mind paying the luxury tax for a year or two, and he's also not afraid to bet on himself to be able to get a good return for his assets when he goes to trade them so that he can just swing these around and turn into more assets to just continue building without ever slowing down. And until proven otherwise, I think, you know, you can assume he's going to do that. So short version for the Bucks is I think they're the overwhelming favorites to win the title this season, and don't be shocked if they are in it for the next 2-3 seasons until the luxury tax finally forces them to make some hard choices. And even then, I suspect, you know, Doug has always been able to get excellent value for his players. I suspect he'll be able to do that again, and rather than rebuild, he's just going to reload. Next up is the Chicago Bulls. This is Logan's team. This is a team that I think tried to position themselves as someone who could match up with the Bucks, with Tre Rollins and LaSalle Thompson and Steve Johnson and James Bailey. They've got a collection of big men that are all extremely good rebounders. They're all good post defenders. The block shots are pretty good. Tre Rollins has 100. LaSalle Thompson has a 90. The rest of their guys are 60s and 70s. So maybe not quite as overwhelming as the Bucks, but very similar. Look at their backcourt, and they're running Maurice Cheeks, who's a great defender in his own right, with 100 steal and a high perimeter defense. The one difference is they didn't go all in on defense. They do have Calvin Natt at shooting guard, but I think given that he's averaging 30 points and 8 rebounds, you can probably excuse them that indulgence. So the Bulls, to me, would probably be the favorites if the Bucks weren't around, just because they do almost everything the Bucks do, just not quite as well. But they're a strong team. They're a deep team, especially in the front court. Having Steve Johnson kicking around. Oh, it looks like he must have gotten a boost in TC because before he was green, he's been around for a while. What I have always loved about him is that he is hyper efficient. He has a career field goal percentage of 61%. This season, he's slightly down at 59%. But what it means is that he will consistently be a big where when he's pressed into minutes, he's certainly not hurting you. And he's been pressed into a lot of the minutes this season due to injury. And mostly, I think, due to them trying to figure out how do they want to play the matchups. Tre Rollins and Johnson have been splitting time. LaSalle is now down with a sprained ankle, so I think there will be an opportunity for Johnson to pick up a few more minutes. But, you know, again, if you look at their bigs, Rollins is averaging 27 minutes, LaSalle 28, Steve Johnson 25, James Bailey 25. So they really have a deep, deep rotation, meaning if you get one into foul trouble, it's next guy up. I think the potential Achilles heel probably is Calvin Natt. If he gets injured or if you can get him into foul trouble, that does put some pressure offensively on the Bulls to produce. I don't know that they have a consistent guy that creates shots for himself. Mo Cheeks can create shots for others. But if they don't have Nat, I don't think Purvis Short can quite do it, and I don't trust any of the other guys to be a true offensive initiator for themselves. And if I'm being honest, Nat is, he's 29, and he's starting to show signs of slowing down. And what I mean by that is if you look at his debut season, when he kind of burst onto the scene with the Spurs, he shot 55.5%. The next season in KC, 55.7%. Then 54, then 52. He's now at 50. So you can see the beginnings of erosion in that. He started so high that that it's not super noticeable. The one thing that he has gotten markedly better at this season is in his passing. He's doing a lot better with his assist to turnover ratio, and most of that is coming from fewer turnovers. So then the question is, what does the current and future prospects for the Bulls hold? I think the current prospects are, they are probably hoping that the Bulls do blow it up. They're going to have to re-sign LaSalle Thompson, but they're not that far over the cap. Craig Hodges will be a restricted free agent, most likely. They can probably afford to let him go if they have to. James Bailey is not going to command a monster raise, so they will probably be a little bit over the cap this year. They managed to duck under the cap. And again, this is assuming they want to bring everybody back. Maybe they feel like they can decline the team option on Purvis Short, but the short version is their core is in good shape. They're going to be able to bring it back more or less intact. And I think because of where they sit salary-wise, they can try to wait out the Bucks, which is not normally a strategy I condone. Everybody who thinks, oh, I'll just wait for a year or two, and then this super team is going to blow things up. Well, usually they're able to get enough in return where it doesn't really help and you're still stuck behind them. I think that could be the case with the Bucks. But the Bulls will definitely pressure them, and if the Bucks can't get ideal returns for their players, I think the 1987 season is probably the season when we see the Bulls take over as favorites in the Central at the least, and possibly in the entire league. So keep an eye on the Bulls. I think it's possible in the right matchup with foul trouble or with an injury that they might be able to knock the Bucks out, but you know they're not going to see the Bucks probably until the conference finals. So you know, I think of all the teams in the East, both the Bulls and the Bullets are best equipped to knock off the Bucks. I don't put them as favorites to do it. I just lean, or I leave out there the possibility that they could. And I do think they are incented to keep the team together through 1987 simply because they don't have their own 87 pick. We've talked before about how teams, you know, generally like to get their own pick back before they start blowing things up. So this season, I think it goes to the Bucks. Next season, if the Bucks start to sell off, the Bulls have a chance to pass them. In 87, I think the Bucks will be forced to do something. And that's the opening for the Bulls. So their window is starting to open. And if they can hold it together, I think they have a good chance to move past the Bucks and kind of take over the Central in the future. The next team that we'll look at is the Pistons. They're currently sitting at 38-23. It's a team that's a little bit shallow in terms of depth. They are currently running with, 2, 4, 6, 8, 9 players. So they're a little bit susceptible to injuries. And right now, Robert Reed is out with a cheekbone injury for 18 games. So they better hope that They don't have another injury, or they might have to go out and emergency sign a player. They're not close enough to the luxury tax for that to be an issue, but they are over the cap. So a couple of injuries could really be devastating. The Pistons, they're an interesting team. I talked in my last pod about teams that are on two timelines, and that kind of feels like the Pistons to me. They've got the Kevin Willis, Terry Cummings, Alvin Robertson troika that are young up-and-coming stars. They've got Daryl Griffith, who's a star in his prime, and then they've got the likes of Alex English and Michael Ray Richardson, who are both over 30. So you could either say they have a good mix, or you could say their timelines are a little bit misaligned. They do seem to, they seem to be well-balanced, I guess is the way I could put it. I wonder if Alvin Robertson might be a little undersized at shooting guard, same with Daryl Griffith. And so I think they would like to get a little more bulk, a little more size, especially on the wings. That's I guess, their decision to make. Looking at the way the team is performing, they're doing a good job utilizing just about everybody on the roster. About the only guy that doesn't get a ton of run is Rob Williams at point guard. The thing for the Pistons is this is the offseason that they're going to have to pay Terry Cummings. And they're probably going to have to let go of Wayne Cooper. They may pay Rob Williams as well. He's coming up to be an RFA, and knowing the tendency of people in this league not to want to let go of assets for nothing, I think Terry Cummings, he's a max-worthy player. Rob Williams, I don't think anybody's going to give him the max, but I think you can give him enough to make it painful for the Pistons to keep him. Now, as I look at their roster, the one thing I think they could do to help that out is cut Michael Ray Richardson. The problem is I don't know that Williams is ready to replace MRR yet. You can argue that maybe MRR is a little bit overrated. He's only averaging 10 points in 31 minutes, but he's also giving you 8 assists, a great steals number at 1.9, a good assist-to-turnover ratio. And you compare that with Williams, and he's just not nearly as productive. Has a better assist-to-turnover ratio, but doesn't shoot nearly as well, doesn't score. The assists are okay. So I think this is a crossroads. And if the team decides to let go of Michael Ray Richardson, I think the follow-up question is, do they try to deal Alex English, and can they deal Alex English? English is a really big salary, and there are becoming fewer and fewer teams in the league that are able to absorb that. Again, looking back at this team, they've kind of gone all in on the present. They only have one draft pick, which means even after the draft next year, they're going to be subject to the stepping rule. They can't really move draft picks until such time as they get another first. So this feels like it's kind of the team for now. And if it is, it's not enough to beat the Bucks and the Bulls. And that maybe that's a problem for T-Bone. Maybe it's not. Maybe he has a belief that Cummings and Willis and Robertson and Rob Williams can continue to grow and push them past their competition. The caveat is always, how do you improve and how do you get deeper? And the second thing I would ask is what you're currently doing working? And I think the answer is no, simply because when I look at this team's points per shot, which is a great measure of offensive efficiency, they're second to last in the league. And that tells me that this particular mix of players isn't doing it, which means one player at least is going to need to go. And if you're not able to move the big salary of Alex English, maybe you have to look at moving Daryl Griffith. I know they've tried to move Robert Reed unsuccessfully, and so that may be the contract that is kind of their downfall in terms of forcing them to make a move they don't necessarily want to make. Future-wise, I think the future is muddled. They have a good young core. What I don't know is, do they have a way to add to that core enough to make the jump they need to make to get into true contention for the division? And I don't know that they have the ability to do that. They could probably sell off the young pieces to get older pieces. And there's a time to do that. You know, when you think you're close and you're trying to push over the edge, that's when you can push away your youth movement chips. But it feels like with all their draft picks gone, they've already done that. It doesn't feel like they're going to be trading Willis or Cummings or, you know, or Robertson. So this is kind of what we're looking to run with. This is who the Pistons are, and it's a good team, but it's not an elite team. And so then, you know, the next concern, at least if I'm a Pistons fan, is how do I become an elite team? And I don't know that I know the answer for that without making some severe changes to their roster, and I don't know that they want to do that. Next up is the Pacers, and I've mentioned on this podcast before, generally I tend to like the acquisitions that the Pacers make. This season, I have to admit, I was a little down on some of the moves that they made. They got rid of Joe Barry Carroll, who was an anchor for them in the middle, and they haven't really replaced him. They've gone very guard and wing heavy. They've been starting John Lucas for much of the season. They've started Jeff Malone and Jerome Kersey, which, fine, that's their future. Michael Cage is probably their future. But the rest of their starters have kind of been lackluster. Jeff Malone has had a great scoring season, but what I don't think anybody is going to mistake Jeff Malone as a number one offensive option. I think we all know he's best suited to be at best a two and probably a three in terms of offense. And that's not position. That's, you know, is he your first option? Is he your second option? I think he's a low grade two option. He'd be a high grade three option. The problem is they don't have a one or a two. So by default, he becomes their one. I think they probably brought in Dennis Johnson hoping he could do something, but they just haven't been able to get him on the floor long enough. They've stuck with John Lucas, which I think is kind of a mistake. I suspect this is being done out of a sense of trying to feature other people, because we know John is going to defer to his teammates in terms of moving the ball around and getting guys chances. But I don't know. I mentioned before, I'm not a fan of Jeff Malone's defense, so I don't think he's a great option for you. And if he's your number one option, that's going to be problematic. And you can see that in the team's ratings. They're actually surprisingly toward the top of the league off defensively, but offensively, they're pretty poor. They're not super accurate. And so you have to lay that blame at the feet of their high volume shooters. And their high volume shooters are Malone and Kelvin Ranzi and Dennis Johnson. Dennis Johnson's kind of a sad case. You know, he's shooting 35% for the season, which is, quite frankly, terrible. And so I would almost guarantee you that team option that's floating out there for him next season does not get picked up. He's not a max player, which is what he's being paid as, and so there's no way Pauly should even consider paying him next season. I think this is a team that's ripe to blow it up. If they decline his option, they will have... and they may decline John Lucas's option as well. That would knock almost $3 million in cap space off their books, which makes them immediately into the scariest free agent player on the market. I think, you know, the Pacers have moved on from the JBC and Dantley era, and they haven't yet got their new guy. And I'm not even sure they've got much in the way of supporting pieces. The guys that are young enough that you might consider they're going to be supporting pieces are Manute Bol, they're Jerome Kersey, Jeff Malone, I guess, and that maybe Michael Cage. And so the question that I would have if I were in Pauly's shoes is, are these guys doing what I'd like? He's giving Michael Cage as many minutes as he possibly can. We've seen Jeff Malone has gotten a lot of minutes. Jerome Kersey is getting a lot of minutes. So he's playing his young guys. The problem is there's not a lot of talent around them, and their guys aren't, I don't want to say they're not very good, but they're not good enough to carry a team. He doesn't have his superstar yet. And I'm not entirely convinced that the supporting cast is ready to surround a superstar yet. I think the Pacers are on year one of what's likely to be a pretty long rebuild. Pauly's patient, so I think it will be fine. He does have all of his own picks, so I do think the Pacers will slowly begin to build up. But you know, if you're asking me when their window is, I don't think it's any time in the next 3 years or so. So Indiana fans, you're going to have to be patient. Next up is the Cavaliers. And this team makes me sad. It's a team that started off by drafting Jim Paxton and Sidney Moncrief. They were both all-stars in season one. And you would have hoped that they would have been able to put together a winner around those two. It just hasn't happened. Sidney Moncrief is still as good a two-way player as ever. Jim Paxton has never realized the potential that sits with that blue-purple color, his blue-purple ratings. And he's now hitting the age of 28, and so I don't anticipate he's going to get a ton better. He's still a good player, one of the better guards in the league. Not overwhelming. Moncrief is still very good. So yeah, they're Jim Paxton and they're Sidney Moncrief, and that's what they've been for the last 6 years, and that's not enough. Rick Mahorn, they've had with them from the beginning. He's okay. He's nothing special. David Greenwood was their big free agent acquisition this season. He took a big step back. His shooting percentage is way down. I don't know exactly why that is, but I do kind of think that might be a signing in free agency that they would like to get back. They're still trying to, find the pieces around Moncrief and Paxton, and the window is just closing. And if you haven't been able to find the pieces around them for six seasons, I think at that point it probably becomes time to look around and ask, okay, what can I get for these guys? I haven't been able to build around them. I need to flip and get younger and find new stars to build around. I don't know if the Cavaliers are ready to do that. I think they like their roster. I feel like they are of the opinion that this roster is solid, but it's a roster that is it's getting a little bit older. Nobody is probably to the point where they're going to be taking massive hits yet, but all of their key players are old enough to have gotten paid, except for Michael Adams. And what that means is they're already over the salary cap, and they're going to be over the salary cap for this foreseeable future. And they're going to be getting young players because they have their own draft picks, but do they have time? They're running out of time with Moncrief and Paxton, quite frankly. And do they get to the point where they're going to train fast enough? I don't know. I feel like the Cavaliers, they had a moment where they looked like they might be ready to make a jump up. That was probably in 81 when they went for 52 wins. This is their first season, their second season, I guess. Last season was the first, where they were under 500. This is looking like it's shaping up to be another under 500 year, barring some miracle. And the Cavaliers have been going mostly with the same squad that got them here since the beginning, and it's just not working anymore. So I think, GL Marines, it doesn't have to be to me, but I do think it's time to consider what pieces can I or should I move to get either a young star or to get young talent whereby you might be able to divide to train them up to become stars. And that's where we're at. I just think, you know, the Cavaliers, they're in limbo. Maybe they get lucky in the lottery. Maybe something happens, but, you know, they're just not a very good team, and they don't seem to have a game plan for getting better. And it just seems like they keep rolling out the same core year after year, and that core isn't good enough anymore. It might have been good the first few seasons of the leagues. It's just not there. And finally, we get to the Hawks. We all know the Hawks were in a tough position when Ryan took it over. And honestly, they've been a little less active than I would have expected. I think they've done a good job of trying to convert some of the veteran talent that they had in the past to go young. I do like their troika of Cliff Robinson, Charles Barkley, and Derek Harper. What they're lacking right now is depth around that. And I'm not sure how they get there. Youth-wise, assuming they decline Clement Robinson's deal, which I think they probably should for next season, they got plenty of cap room. They're a team that can really shift who they are quickly. Obviously, Robinson's making a lot of money. Barkley and Harper are still on rookie contracts. Not to toot my own horn here, but I'm going to do it a little bit. I do think the pickup of David Robinson, who came over from the Trailblazers, has been helpful for their depth because he's giving them 21 points a game, which, behind Cliff Robinson, you know, makes for a decent number two punch. But he's not the long-term solution. He's 31. He might have another season like this in him. But I think this is probably the last stop for David Thompson. And the priority now in Atlanta needs to be trying to add young assets. I think it's helpful for them if they have the Nuggets draft pick next season. They do have their own draft picks. They probably want to hold on to those. Again, the question is just going to be how quickly can they find additional pieces to add around their trio, and how quickly is that going to come? And probably the third question I would have is, do they have the right three pieces? And the reason I ask that is I think, I like the Cliff Robinson and Charles Barkley fit. I might like them a little bit better if Barkley slid up to the power forward and Johnson was the small forward, but I think it's fine. Derek Harper, I think I mentioned when he was drafted, the thing that I worry about him is he was going to take a long time to develop offensively, and that does seem to be the case. Even on a bad team, he's only averaging a hair under 14 points a game on 45% shooting. That needs to improve before the Hawks are going to get better. And will Derek Harper improve? And if he does, how fast? And if he doesn't, is it time to ditch him and get somebody else? Well, the good news is for the Hawks, they have their team's first-round pick this year. They're probably in the market for a center. They're probably in the market for a point guard. But the good news for them, such as it is that Barkley and Robinson can slide up if they need to. So if the best player is a shooting guard or is a point guard or even a small forward, they can go ahead and get that. And then the other question becomes, what kind of a player should they be after? And I think we can kind of take a look at their overall ratings for this. They're second to last in points, they're dead last in assists, they're last in turnovers, they're last in field goal percentage. They struggle on both ends of the floor. The one thing that they kind of hold their own on is fouls, so I guess that's good. The Hawks just, they need more talent, and this is a team, and I touched on it a little bit before, I think there are two sorts of talented teams. There's the team with talent that has depth and is waiting for a transcendent superstar to take them over the top. I would posit that that's kind of the way that my Trailblazers were last season. There wasn't one overwhelming star. I think had I been able to get one overwhelming star, it would have made my path through the playoffs more easy. But getting a star often means giving up a lot of that depth, so you have to be careful, which is why I didn't do it. On the flip side, instead of having a team that's a star away, you have a team that's depth away. You might have a team with, let's say, a good alpha, a good sidekick, and maybe a defensive-minded player is the third, but they're basically black holes at the other two positions, I think. Trying to figure out how to balance that up so that you're dangerous everywhere is something that every team needs to do. And the Hawks, more than most, could really use another two-way star. The good news for them, such as it is that they are likely to come away with one in the draft this season. I know there's been a lot of complaints about this draft. I think it's, I don't want to get too far into a draft preview, but I think it's mostly because there's really only one, well, let's say two, big men of consequence. There's Brad Doherty at center and Dennis Rodman at power forward. And then everybody else that I think is going to have an immediate impact is a wing or a guard. And I think everybody is used to the fact that you need to have a monster presence inside. And the thing that I see that encourages me if I'm a Hawks fan is I think even though Derek Harper is currently playing at shooting guard, you could move him to point guard and he'd be fine. Charles Barkley and Cliff Robinson, you know, they can play big men slots. They play big. They're fine where they're at. Which means what you really need for this team is either a shooting guard to let Harper slide down to his natural point guard system or in their system, or you need to get a point guard so you kind of play a double point guard look with Derek Harper, which we've seen be good for some other teams. I think the Hawks have a lot of good options at shooting guard and point guard. You know, Mark Price, rather, would be an excellent point guard next to Harper. They've got Ron Harper, Jeff Hornacek, Del Curry on the board as shooting guards. Even Nate McMillan as kind of a defensive-minded guard could be good. So the good news for the Hawks is I think the draft fits well their positions of need right now. So they're probably content to play out the string. I think they want to avoid bringing on big salary, which, you know, assuming again that they dump Clement Johnson's option, they will probably have succeeded with. And then they can either go big game hunting in the offseason, they can make some RFA decisions difficult for teams, or they can try to offer their services as a cap space outlet to engage in more pick collection. Whatever they do, I think they should continue on the slow build. Ryan's been patient to this point. Robinson, Barkley, and Harper form a core that should still be scary even 3 or 4 years from now. So just, you know, keep accumulating, keep adding to it. I think the Hawks right now, they don't have a transcendent superstar to build around, and they can get that from this draft. If they don't have lotto luck, or if they don't feel they can get the guy they want, I do think it would behoove them to try to trade for cheap depth, simply because right now, you know, once you get past their first three guys, they're starting a yellow David Thompson, for crying out loud, and he's the second most important player on the team. That tells you how desperate they are for depth. So Brian, maybe do a few articles, get some points, you know, train some players. But the Hawks, to me, you know, they're not in a bad position because they do have all their picks. They have the Nuggets pick next season. I can see how they're going to get better. It's just going to take time, and they're going to have to be patient. So there you have it. That is the Central. I don't want to unnecessarily pad this, so we're going to wrap this one up, and we'll be back with the Midwest probably on the next pod. With that, everyone, enjoy your final few Sims. Prepare for the tax man to cometh and start planning those playoff lineups. Wig out.